Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Nisha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army, Taylor. Media darling and Midwest champion of the world, you're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show. I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Once again, this is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you. It's already December. It is December 7, 2017, and we have another great MMA show for you here on Blog Talk Radio. In just a few moments, we're going to speak to Jesse JT Money Taylor. He is the recent Ultimate Fighter Redemption winner, seasoned veteran, someone as a two-time Ultimate Fighter veteran of the TV show. He's been making a killing on the regional circuits, fighting his way back to the UFC. Remarkable perseverance and career. He's fought at 170. He's fought at 185 pounds. He's also fought for various different organizations. And so it's really something. We're very, very proud to have him on the program. That's actually him now. We're going to try to redirect him to the call-in number here, which is 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. After we get an opportunity to speak to Jesse, we're actually going to talk about UFC, the last pay-per-view. It's been a while since I've been on the air. It's just been crazy. We had a lot of things happen. A lot of champions that became champions, or fighters that became champions. A lot of upsets. It's just been something really remarkable. That is really our sport. Just the unpredictability of MMA in general is really something that keeps us all on the edge of our seats. You've got the Ultimate Fight Night coming up that looks pretty interesting. I want to try to talk a little bit about that. So we got a lot to talk about here on Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. Okay, in any event, let's go to Jesse Taylor here. He joins us here on the hotline. Jesse, how are you, man?
Oh, hey, what's up, Bob? How you doing?
Thanks for calling. We really, really appreciate it. It's an absolute honor to have you on the show today, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Can you guys hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. What about you? Can you hear me okay, Jesse?
Yeah, awesome. I can hear you. I got this Bluetooth, and I'm not a 21st century kind of man, so I'm kind of
likewise, man. I don't even have the Bluetooth. I still have the phone up to my ear, which in my state of New Jersey, it's like a $500 fine. I'm telling you, it's like crazy.
Oh, yeah, I got Bluetooth in my car, but it's like the outdated one, and I actually just end up picking the phone up and talking into it anyway, so I don't even really know why I have it.
Yeah, well, listen, before we start, I want to give a big shout-out to Ryan Van Doom. He's the one that actually hooked this up and was able to get the interview with Jesse. Want to thank him. He's a great guy. Speaks
yep.
very, very highly of you, and says you're a really, really great person and a great fighter. So thanks to him, and again, you know, thanks for you to come on the show.
Yeah, no worries. I've known Ryan for years, I have a funny story about him. I met him.
Yeah.
I think I met him before my first fight ever. I was working at like LA
right.
Fitness back in the day. Yeah, and he was the front desk guy. He knew I was already fighting. And he knew more about me. He was like a fighter, fighting encyclopedist. I'd always chat with him about stuff. But I remember him. I knew him before this whole journey started. So it's cool to see him still around the sport too.
Yeah, it's cool to see guys that go way back still, you know, in touch and friendly and you know, loyal and. You know, watching each other—that's really, really something. He's definitely a good guy. I've come in contact with him over the last like a year or so, and he helped me get his girlfriend, Tara LaRosa, on the program. So, we definitely owe him a few favors. But in any event, listen, you know, this is a real strange place, I think, in with your career now. I mean, hopefully, we could talk about that in just a few moments. But before we do, though, I really want to say right off the bat that I think that you are one of the most underrated and overlooked fighters in modern MMA history. I mean, largely due to the circumstances that weren't anything to do with fighting. I mean, after what happened with your first appearance on The Ultimate Fighter, very few people would have been not able just to pick up the pieces and continue, but to grind relentlessly on the regional scenes around the world in an unforgiving and brutal circumstance and piecing together wins and streaks and having to start all over again several times, so not enough people give you credit for that, and I don't want to be one of them, because you're a true warrior, and I really, really salute you. But in some ways, your background was what made the Redemption series of The Ultimate Fighter such a compelling story and a big success, and easily the best version of the show for what it feels like decades. Take me through where you were with your career before you got the call to appear on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that. I mean, the regional circuit, that's the hardest thing. Oh, God, I'm so happy I'm just not there anymore. And having to start over numerous times and get win streaks together, it's a tough thing to do, but it's funny. Where I was, I was kind of, you know, typical, so up and down, and I think I put it all together, best in the world, but I was kind of, I was going over to Russia, and I was fighting these absolute killers over there. Sometimes I'd actually beat them, but I was losing the fire, you know, kind of, you know, they're sending me over here, giving me a little payday, but, you know, no exposure, and I'm fighting guys that could very well contend for the UFC belt, I think. Anyways, I was
right.
kind of over it, you know, going over there, and I was doing this forever, you know. I'm like, why isn't the UFC ever going to call me? And just when you think it's kind of all over is when it happens. I just kept grinding, and Tom Galicchio, fellow New Jersey native too, actually, he's the one who told me first, and I'm just like, no way. Cause I was kind of in a stage where, not hanging it up, but pretty close, you know. I was like, you know, how long can I keep doing this? You know, is everyone going to call? And then, of course, is when it, that's when it all comes together. And, yeah, Tom told me, and from there, I reached out to the producers. My name kind of got put in the circle, and then the producers are like, holy shit, they probably thought, this is a great storyline. We've got to bring them back. And I got that chance. I got that opportunity, and I just kind of told myself, if I could, I want to put everything in the bag. You know, I want to train my hardest, do what I've always done, but really, really put it all together mentally, physically, and spiritually, and go for it. And I got on. And once I was on, I just knew I had that unstoppable force, that fire within, and that's kind of where I was. So I was kind of done, and then I got the call to come back, and I was so pumped, so excited. I couldn't have been stopped. Kind of a destiny. It was a true redemption, and you can't even write a story better. It was crazy how it all happened. I'm still kind of in disbelief, but stoked it happened.
Yeah, it's really amazing, because at the time, correct me if I'm wrong here, but looking at your record from the time, it seems, and this is the time before you were called to, for the Ultimate Fighter Redemption, that you had begun to fight less frequently. Lost to Seth Prasinski, and then you lost by arm lock to Berkhamov in ACB from
right.
Moscow.
I beat Seth Prasinski, and then I took another fight. Yeah, I took that Russia fight because I remember I'm like, okay, I'm back. And I took that Russia fight. The guy was a killer, and I kind of had a really bad wake up. No excuses. But he beat me. Then after that, I was like, dude, I got to keep going on the road. Yeah, it was kind of one of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, during that run of fights, you had actually lost 3 or 4 all by submission. Did you feel as if your mental focus was negatively affected by anything during that time in those fights?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anyone, especially at the highest level, like... again, all those guys were really skilled, but at the same time, you know, I definitely think that fire was not there as much during those times. Sometimes I had to get it going again, but, you know, it was a tough thing, especially the...
Hello?
I'm a pretty big guy, so to get down at 70, I really got to have my diet on point, and... Yeah, I think definitely. I think especially towards the end there before the Ultimate Fighter, I was at that stage where it was more about the payday, you know, and kind of just the grunt, like something I was just used to doing. But I don't think I was too much into it, no.
You know, one of the things which seems most beneficial about your style is that you frequently don't take a lot of damage or clean strikes. From what I recall, you didn't take a beating in any of those fights, and there was no obvious reason for people around you to be suggesting that you should retire or anything like that. But still, did that cross your mind after having been in the game so long at that time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Retirement was there. It was kind of in the back of my mind. And, I was kind of just kind of debating it, you know. Especially after those losses, I wasn't really too into it as much, you know. And as much as I love traveling, I was getting no exposure either for a lot of those fights. Even when I won some of them, and still no exposure. So, yeah, I was kind of just getting over it, I'd say, for sure.
Yeah, because I'm trying to give people some context for what a life-changing offer the Ultimate Fighter invitation must have been at the time. And I know you must have had a lot of really interesting, enriching, and thrilling experiences fighting all over Europe and the world prior to that. But even for a person with your endurance and tenacity, all that travel, some of the BS, being matched up against hometown fighters must have exerted some mental and physical toll on you, correct?
Oh, yeah. And I've been doing it forever, too, you know, and I think it just... Yeah, that's what it, I mean. Like you nailed it. It was just such a life changing opportunity, especially at that time. It was kind of at a time when I thought it was going to be over. I kind of did, you know. And I remember I kind of got back from Russia, and I was kind of like in the, you know, like in a dry land. I was like, you know, I don't know. I didn't really know what I was doing, where my career was going, you know. And once I got that call and once I just found out about the Ultimate Fighter, it was life. All the fire, all the dreams, it all came back, you know. I was kind of done, and it all came back when I found out about it.
How hard was that lifestyle? Is it possible to make people listening to a show like this understand just by telling them?
You know, I think I gotta, when it's all said and done, I gotta eventually, I write it all on paper, write a little book. I mean, it's hard to put into words. I could talk about it, but in case you've done it, you gotta imagine, it's fun being on the road. You learn a lot, you meet a lot of people, but it's hard always being that guy, you know, and, it's more of a mental drain than anything.
Right. Do any experiences stick out at the time that were particularly hard? I mean, were any promoters bad to you? Did they stiff you or fights where you didn't get a fair shake from the referee or the judges?
Oh, man. Since the first Ultimate Fighter, it's almost like I went through hell and back. That's how I describe it,
yeah.
Noah. The promoters weren't – I did deal with a promoter or two that tried to stiff me. There was one time I went down to Australia. I fought Muriel Bustamante, beat him, and I was, you know, I think he ended up paying me a little, but never got nearly as well as I was supposed to get. That happened a couple times, fighting in, you know, crazy. But I remember going down. I was on vacation in Costa Rica, seeing my kids. I needed the money, and I did a fight in Panama, and it was totally like Kenny Powers, but MMA style. You know, it was just total bush leagues, and I remember sometimes questioning, like, what the fuck, you know, questioning myself, like, what the fuck am I doing, what am I doing, and, it was tough, and especially building yourself back up when you're kind of rode off, and then you get your steam going again, and then me, too, I wasn't the best businessman. I think I'd always, that fighting anyone, anywhere, anytime, you know, it's courageous, but it's not always the best business decision doing that. In the case, you know, fighters, really people of the sport understand, but I think very few people, I'm trying to brag here, I don't think too much people could do it. Getting up every time after falling down, you know, that's what it's just getting up every time after falling down, that's what it's like.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side, too, you must have had a lot of amazing experiences traveling and meeting people all over the world. I mean, anything that comes to mind right away that you could share with people about fighting and just traveling all over the world?
Yeah, cool. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, for all I say the negative of it, I wouldn't take back a thing because I had a crazy journey. I think, even in the fight game, no one, very small number of fighters have had the journey I think I've had. And it's been incredible. I mean, I remember I fought in Australia a lot. Every time I went down there, I fell in love with a girl. It's just, it's an incredible world out there. And I think when it's funny, you know, this brute fighter, but you know, you kind of get cultured, you know. I've seen the world and back, and I got so much experiences, you know. It's hard to label just one, it really is. But there've been some wild ones for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, by this point, everyone knows the story of what happened with your first appearance on The Ultimate Fighter 7 and your removal from the finale. However, the details of it aren't clear, and maybe they aren't clear for you either. I mean, given the fact that alcohol was apparently involved. Do you have any recollection of that night? I mean, can you take us through what happened, if you remember anything?
I mean, at the time, too, I was a young kid, you know, who just had the world thrown out to myself. I thought if I got that fight, I would have won at that time, too. But I remember I was just super excited. I was a little bit younger, too, so I was just super excited. And I was young and started drinking and drank just too much, kind of a bad night in Vegas, and don't get me wrong, I think it was bad, and I actually don't regret it because I've had this crazy journey since then, but I do think that in some cases they would have overlooked that, but it made for good TV, it made for a little bit of a story, and I was that scapegoat, I was that person to fit it, so they just kind of ran with the story, But for the actual night, I recall it a little bit. I kind of got, I was horse playing in the limo and ended up kicking the window out. And but the crazy thing is, while I thought it wasn't a big deal at the time, you know, I remember too, I'm like, you know, I'll fix this. And I went back and I actually paid for the window and I paid. Everything's cool. And then later that week, episode, they put all the drama,
thematics
in there.
Yeah, we were told that, you know, the limousine, but we were also told that you ran into a casino and were, quote, harassing women. Now, especially given the recent events, I think the last part is the one which is going to have people concerned. Nobody really cares about a car window getting smashed out or a drunk guy in a casino, but I think society is starting to quickly realize that women have been persecuted and victimized at every level of society. Have you been told that you did anything more serious than what was reported? I mean, were you simply making a nuisance of yourself, or did you actually physically assault anyone?
See, yeah, that's the thing I was always confused about. From what I remember and recall, what went down, there was no harassing of women. I think I was maybe acting out of, like a drunk man. I was acting wild,
right,
for sure, but I was not harassing. I remember talking to girls and them laughing, and there was no harassment. I might have been a little disorderly, but
right,
even to my recollection, there was no harassment. I think that was something kind of, they took the ball and ran with it, you know, and kind of gave me that label too. And that's one of the things I never agreed with, but
right,
you know, with all the public eyes on me, being drunk and out of control is a no-no. You can't do that. So, one of the things I've learned along the way, but I still to this day don't agree with. I was not harassing any women, though.
Yeah, thanks for clearing that up. Though, you know, you were saying I'm a UFC fighter, I'm guessing you were telling people you're a UFC fighter, which is not the first time it's happened with UFC fighters. But the reaction from the UFC was swift and fairly brutal. I mean, it could not have been as bad as it could have been. Maybe the Fertittas, you know, could have done some other things and whatnot. But what sort of reaction did you get from the UFC beyond what we saw on camera? Did they talk to you about the nature of your punishment or the exact consequences? Did they say that you're done, get out, and that was it?
No, nothing. Again, that's why I was surprised. I knew what I did was a no-no. I thought it would be like a little slap on the wrist.
Right.
But again, I thought it was more of a thing where I kind of just got a little too drunk, but I didn't do anything that bad, and I broke the windows. And I really thought once I paid for it and took care of it all, I was done, never heard anything. And then once they called me back and they sat me down, that was the first thing I heard of it too. So I didn't know until they called me in. And again, I think it was one of those things too. It made for good TV, you know. So they make a little thing and they could really make it into a real big thing. And I think that's kind of what happened. I wouldn't say I was a victim per se, but I kind of asked for it. But at the same time, I think they made it a lot worse than it seemed.
Yeah. And so what was your reaction time? I mean, what were you going through emotionally at the time?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's what the whole journey. It's an emotional roller coaster, all these fights. But at that time, I was emotional. You know, finding out, I was very emotional. I was devastated, especially the fact you can't tell anyone what happens. But, of course, you want to tell your very close family and your very close friends. And then to tell them that and then have this happen and go, I didn't even say anything. So it was all a surprise to them, too. And that was a hard thing to deal with, letting people down, letting myself down, letting my kids, I had one son at the time, letting my son down. And I was devastated, but I was more bummed. I was not going to let that be the end of me. I wasn't going to let that, I was going to let this be my motivational factor and especially right after, really added a lot of fuel on the fire. I went on quite the win streak right after. But I was more motivated than anything to kind of prove this wrong, prove the whole situation wrong. And but, yeah, at the time it was very turbulent. I was very, very upset, really sad through the whole thing, yeah.
Were you someone who had ever considered themselves to have a problem with alcohol? I mean, even in the sense of just getting too crazy when drunk rather than being drunk too often?
Oh, yeah. Especially, you know, lifelong, you learn, especially the years go on. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I have a problem with alcohol. I'm not the alcoholic through getting, I'm not the one that, you know, does it every night or even weekly, but when I do drink, I embarrass a little bit, you know, I get a little carried away with it. It's kind of like, it's a real poison to me. And since then, most of the times, I pretty much only drink at celebrate, you know, big occasions, weddings, maybe the holidays a little bit if there's not a fight, but I very rarely drink these days. So, I've definitely learned that I'm a person, I can't drink too much. I just can't, I can't handle it.
How much of a maturation process and learning experience was that?
It was, you got no choice, you know, in life. It's a shitty situation, it is, but you have no choice but to grow, you know, or keep going down that drain. And again, that's why I always say I don't regret anything, because I learned a lot. As much as it sucked, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about life. I learned a lot about real world, you know. I learned a lot from the situation.
Yeah, you know, somebody that you and I both know thinks that there was a double standard. You know, you had behavior illustrated by some other people in your weight class, you know, a C.B. Dalloway, who you actually fought, or a Ryan Bader, and the UFC maybe didn't do anything to them or punish them in the same way that they punished you. Do you feel that there was any type of double standard as far as, you know, how some of the other contestants behaved and how they were treated, or you know, is it pretty much, you know, by case by case basis?
Oh yeah, I think especially at the time there's huge double standards. I remember the Rampage situation kind of was going around down
right
at that time, where he got out of control, but he was their star, you know. So they definitely are double standards with that sense. But like I said from the beginning, I think with my situation, they thought, hey, this is drama, this is TV ratings, more people will tune in. We can look the other way, but let's take this case and run with it, you know, and make it the worst possible thing possible.
Now, the UFC did give you a second shot around 5 months after The Ultimate Fighter, when you had your matchup against C.B. Dalloway, which I think many people don't recall that well. Did you have any sense at the time that they were giving you an early chance at redemption back then?
I think they were, in a way, but again, I think I was used a little bit. They needed a show, they needed someone, and I had, again, a lot of viewership, you know, bad publicity is good publicity, you know, so they're like,
right,
here, you know, let's use this guy. And at that time, I don't want to make excuses, but I was going through a lot, the whole thing. I don't think I was ready for that fight, but how do you say no to the UFC? And I went out there and did it, but I wouldn't say they were giving me a chance at redemption. I would say they were more, they needed someone that, if I won, they could have spun it that way, but they kind of needed somebody, and I was the bill that fit it with all the stuff me and CB had, too.
Yeah, CB won the fight with his Peruvian necktie that he doesn't do much anymore for whatever reason. What went wrong for you in that fight? Why did the fight not happen the way that you wanted it to happen?
Again, with that one, I think I was just going through a lot. I just had the Ultimate Fighter. I should have fought in the finale a couple weeks prior.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tough time of my life. I was still an emotional roller coaster. I remember I was drinking a lot too back then to kind of deal with the same stuff that got me in trouble. And I was trying to kind of turn it around too quick. I just was not ready. I think I really think mentally I wasn't there at all. And especially being young, I didn't realize that, you know. And I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready, especially after that whole Ultimate Fighter debacle. So I think that's kind of the main thing. I was really foggy in that fight.
did losing that fight put the final nail in the coffin of your UFC career at the time? I mean, how do they react?
Yeah, I mean, that's right after, I mean, I was cut. I mean, I didn't get another chance after that, which usually they give guys at least another fight. So, again, I think it was more like me being used for ratings and a show, you know. But I just think I wasn't ready, and I think, yeah, I was surprised because right after they cut me. So, yeah, I thought at the time it was done with the UFC, yeah.
How did you go about putting your career back together? I mean, did you have a plan about how you approached other fights, or was it simply a case of fighting as often as possible to make as good a living as you could?
After that fight, I think I turned it around. I was like, I was upset in a good way. I had that fire. I was like, I want to show these people how good I am. You know, I want to show myself how good I am. And I just kind of said, you know, I could do 170s, 185s. I didn't even care. I wanted to fight anyone and everyone. So, you think I had a lot of fire and motivation after the Dolloway fight.
Yeah, because you're someone who doesn't get discouraged easily. You know, that's something that really strikes me about you. I mean, we've seen that. You struggled, to close the dishwasher on the Ultimate Fighter 7, but you never gave up. And then there must have been a point that you felt like the UFC might never agree to have you back. I mean, I remember you went on this huge winning streak against world-class talent in 2012 and 13. You beat Marcel Fortuna, who's a really good fighter, Stephen Kennedy, Chris Fields, and the Cage Warriors champion, Ultimate Fighter veteran Kendall Grove and John Phillips, Elvis Matachik, UFC and MFC champion. So by that standard, that's an amazing run. UFC veterans, world titles. I mean, you beat everyone you could possibly face outside the UFC over 2 years, and they apparently still didn't want to bring you back. What did that feel like at the time? Was it disheartening?
It was. I remember writing Joe Silva, and I don't know, he said he didn't have room for me or someone, but I was just like, come on, you know, because I beat these guys, and a lot of times they'd get the call to the UFC. So I didn't understand what I was doing. Yeah, I didn't understand what I was doing wrong. I think I was getting a tough pill to swallow. I think they're kind of playing hardball with me. And again, I mean, if I maybe was more business savvy, I think I ended up signing with WSOF. And if I just kind of maybe waited around a little bit, maybe they would have eventually picked me up. But it's like I thought I should have earned it to get the call, no ifs or buts, and just come back. But I didn't, so I moved on to another show, and then kept winning. I ended up getting a loss, and I had to start over again. So yeah, it was a tough road for sure. Very tough road.
Did you ever consider doing something other than fighting? I mean, how dark did those times get for JT Money?
Oh, they got dark. I was doing odd jobs on the side. I was bouncing. I was doing construction gigs, and I was teaching classes too, but that's very little money. And I was hustling, you know. I was doing whatever it takes to keep that pipe dream alive. You know, I thought about it, but I didn't want to give up on the dream. You know, I've gotten so far. And it's like, why give up now? And it's, I put everything into it. So it was like, well, might as well ride it till the wheels, ride it till the wheels fall off. It's just keep going. But, yeah, at times it's like, man, come on. Am I just going to be this guy always having to fight outside the UFC? But I kind of made peace with it. I was like, well, I still love what I do. If you love what you do, how do you not keep doing it, And I loved it. So I was going to keep following my passion.
Yeah, well, it's admirable to see that you didn't lose hope. I mean, after the casino incident and the Dolloway fight, you still had hope that you'd fight in the UFC. And then you found that the UFC was doing redemption season with fellow cast member Tom Galicchio. We've had Tom on the show several times when he was with the MFC, and he's a great guy. It's great talking to him, and I love his fighting style and, as you said, fellow New Jersey native. Had Tom contacted you before about appearing on the show? I mean, how was it that he found out?
Tom trains me at Team Quest. So I see him all the time. I don't know. I think, like anything, rumors kind of started, and Tom just took the initiative to actually reach out to the producer, because he knew the producer well,
right.
And I think the producer told him, yeah, it's true, man, they're having a show, you know, apply. And then once Tom told me, I'm like, bro, could you tell the producer, you know, tell him I'm interested, and then they reached out to me, and I put up, you know, all my paperwork.
Oh, yeah, so you were actively, once you knew that they were doing a show like that, you were actively trying to get on the show for yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Once I found out, I mean, Tom definitely helps me, but I did a lot. You know, I tried to get, like, some posts. I did a lot of stuff to do what I can to try to get on the show myself.
How did you react? I mean, did you what about emotionally where you were? I mean, can you describe your emotional state?
I mean, I'll tell you what. Once I found out, like, I had, like, that glimmer of hope. You know, like a sign,
yep,
just kind of radiated. Right when Tom told me, I think we were at practice, and right away, I just had that feeling. You know, I had like a real good sense, and I just followed it, and I was happy. You know, I was like, oh my, you know, this could actually happen. You know, maybe the storybook ending, you know, could come true. And I just kind of followed that feeling and followed. You gotta, you know, follow that instinct and. I just followed it, and it ended up working out.
When they made the offer, did part of you immediately feel like it was inherently your destiny to win the show?
Exactly. Right. I knew I had that feeling when I first found out about it. Right when I found out
mm-hmm.
about it, I just, in my soul, in my mind, I'm like, well, here's your chance, JT, you know, like... This is written for you. Time to fulfill your destiny, kind of deal. You know, I just knew once I found out that this was my show, and I knew once I was on that kind of, you know, it was almost like I already knew I won it. You know, just from once I got accepted, I was very I was in a very good emotional state for sure.
How did your family and the people around you feel when you told them about it? I mean, did you want to or need to make it okay with them before you decided to go away, or was it a question of everyone understanding that it was the right thing to do straight away?
Oh, they knew how much I wanted this. They're ecstatic and excited for me. They knew right away. They kind of knew too. But they supported me, and I think a lot of my close family and friends, I think they knew too that it's what I have to do. It's not even a if or but. It's just what I have to do, and I was, again, once I found out, I think that's why I did so well. I was just in a very, very positive, good emotional state. I had more to prove, I think, than all those guys, too, and I was just in a good state of mind. Going into that show, I was in a good state of mind.
How did you prepare yourself mentally and physically for the show? I mean, did you have a lot of notice to get in shape and train?
Yeah, we had a couple months. But it's hard because they don't really let you know, until that last
mm-hmm.
week. It's kind of like a maybe. But again, I just stayed positive, and I knew I would get on, kind of. And how I prepared, I just trained the hard. I trained the hardest I ever trained in all aspects. But you know, spiritually, physically, I had a good girl in my life. I had some good things actually. As much as I was down, I had some good things going in my life, and. I think the pieces kind of all came together at the right time, you know, and I trained really hard for it. I called my buddy up, Sean Strickland is a beast, and I trained a lot with him and all the Team
mm-hmm.
Quest fighters. And I started cross-training again, and, yeah, I trained. I put it all into it. I trained very hard, but I know you're there on the show for a while, so I also trained smart. I think I trained really smart, too, so I could peek out at the right time if I made it all the way, so... I think I trained more smarter than harder than, you know, anything I've done in my life. I trained it more strategically and smart.
Yeah, and what was it about it that was different than usual? I mean, how did you approach the season in terms of trying to balance strength and endurance?
You know, I made the mistake sometimes of going all in as a wrestler, like 120%. But a lot of times your body breaks down, especially when you get older. You get burnt out physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of I trained really hard, but I also trained smart. I took time off when I needed it. I trained hard, but I rested. I rested good too, and I had my training really dialed in.
How much knowledge, if any, did you have of the cast members?
I heard rumors, and they had us all out for medical, so I saw everyone, and even others that didn't. That didn't get on. So I saw all my competition about a month or so prior, and right when I saw him, I was just really confident. I think I was just not cocky, but confident in my abilities and confident that I could win the whole thing.
What was the atmosphere like when you arrived, and how tense was it as fighters tried to size up who was there?
Oh, it's super tense, very tense. You know, everyone's your friend, but everyone, you know, really wants to fight you. So everyone has something in the back of their mind. So everyone has something in the back of your mind. They want to, you know, kill you. They want to beat your ass. So that's going on. That's very tense. And then also, our coaches didn't make it better. I like TJ. He was my coach, but TJ and Cody were very tense. They were fighting the whole time. So it was a very tense situation. But I'm pretty good at handling in those situations. So I think I just handled it real well.
When you first saw the cast, who did you think were the biggest threats to you?
It's funny. Right away, I thought Diego. I thought Diego would be up there. James Krause, I thought him. Ramsey, I thought him. Mm-hmm. Who else? I think a couple others who fizzled out. Gilbert. Gilbert, I even thought. So I was looking at my talent pretty close, the competition pretty closely. Joe Stevenson too.
Was there anyone that you thought might be the weakest or easiest fight for you personally?
There were. It was funny because I think the guy could have done very good in the tournament and maybe even made it to the finals. But I knew he was tough, but I knew I could beat him, and that was my first fight, and that was Medi. And TJ kind of read my mind, and he called, because I trained with Medi, I wasn't really gunning for him, but TJ, that's a good fight for you, let's do that. And my matchup-wise, it was a very good fight for me. But again, I think Medi could have taken out a lot of the guys in the competition. I just had him first, and from training with him, I knew I would win that fight.
Now, was there anything crazy that happened in the house which didn't make it to the air? I mean, anything that was really, really notable or memorable?
I want to say they kind of showed everything. I think they could have showed more that our team, our blue team, was really tight. I've never been on I was on twice, and the first time our team was tight, but we really bonded. That blue team, we were really close, all of us. That's why we did so well. We were really close, all of us together. Maybe they could have showed more like the strategic game plans towards the end of the guys wanting to fight other. Like there's guys wanting to fight certain guys, you know, and we kind of had no say in it towards the end. But we all had picks. Like I know for the semifinals, I picked Diego, and Tom, because I'm friends with Tom. Tom's like, okay, he'll pick Krause. And that's who we were kind of set to fight. Even Krause agreed. Krause is like, I'll fight Tom. Everyone was in on it except Diego. So, I know, I think even Diego picked me too, but for every reason, they put me in Krause and ended up fighting Diego later. I think they could have showed that. That was interesting. We all tried to plan it to suit us, but we didn't get any of the fights we asked for.
Well, the finale was the most important, obviously. You absolutely crushed Diego Lima in a way that I think few people expected. We've seen him get knocked down before, and he even managed to land a pretty good shot on you, but the way you systematically imposed every facet of your game and finally choked him out was a wonder to behold, and almost certainly the best finale performance in the history of the Ultimate Fighter to date, in my opinion. Are you too humble to take that accolade, or can you agree that it was the best performance in the Ultimate Fighter history finale.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, to tell you the truth, I haven't even really looked about that or thought that, but I knew it was a good performance, and it was good because I got dropped, and then I came back, and I think it's definitely up there. Another one that stands out was the Kendall Grove and Ed Herman one years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think mine's right up there. But I will agree that I think I have the best story of all time. And another thing I do agree with that, it's just the case. I think that I never lost in the house. No one's won as much as me in the house, so I will take the tough goat. But with being the best fighter, thank you. Yeah, I definitely put it up there.
Yeah, you're undefeated with both seasons. Going into that fight, though, how confident were you in winning? I mean, did you feel absolutely confident, more relative to a typical fight?
Oh, I felt great. I did everything I could to win. I never leave camp, really. I went out to Colorado, did my camp out in the altitude, and trained a new guy, and I paid him to coach me. He's a really good coach, too. And Dan Henderson, who I grew up with and trained with, was at my fight, so I had all the right people who I've always wanted there my whole, career to watch me fight. It was like a storybook. It really was. It was, like, too good to be true. And thank God it came to be true, you know. And it was a good – I knew I was going to win. I put everything into that fight.
Yeah, I mean, you dominated the first round when you put him in your world, the world of the relentless wrestling. It seemed as if you would finish him at any moment, but he hung in there. And then the second round, he stunned and briefly dropped you with the punch combination that you were talking about, and everyone was wondering if the redemption story was too good to be true. What went through your mind after Lima's fist, you know, hit you? How hurt were you, and how discombobulated were you at all?
I think what it did, I don't remember. It just kind of put me in instinct mode. I was on autopilot and went back to what I'm best at, the grappling, and turned it into a wild scramble. But I was just on total instinct mode. And I wouldn't say I was hurt more than he kind of put me in that other zone. I just became total instinctual, and it ended up working in my favor when it became more instinct.
Yeah, this is something absolutely incredible. I mean, your ability to withstand strikes and being not being knocked out, I mean, it's really, really something. You've never been stopped by strikes in almost 47 fights. That's pretty admirable.
Yeah, thanks. And, never. Knock on wood.
Yeah. I mean, I hope the folks at home will join me in giving you a brief round of applause for your durability on the feet in the cage. I mean, it's really, really something. When you went down and popped back up, you went into kind of instinct mode, but did it enrage you at all, like a wild animal, or was it just you were kind of just doing what your body and your mind told you to do?
I think both. I think it kind of – sometimes they say when you get punched, you either run or it kind of gave me that fire, you know, I want to finish this guy. Yeah, it made me like a wild animal, and kind of my body and mind was all in the right spot, and it just did what I had to do.
You choked him out, then took home the money and the gigantic check. Nobody knows better than you the redemption season played out absolutely perfectly. But then anything you did, it was just really, really great, and You definitely fulfilled a good storyline. Is there any way to describe what you felt when they gave you that hilariously oversized check and the tournament trophy?
Relief. That was the biggest thing. I did it all these years, and I finally made that money that should have been made years ago. And I just a gigantic sense of relief and happiness and joy. The biggest thing that came out of it, too, is, I didn't go buy a car or nothing like that,
mm-hmm.
but I get to hang out with my kids, and I get to go on trips with my kids and buy my kids things, and I'd go on family vacations, things I never could do. And little things like that I'm super thankful for. I could kind of just live a life of freedom finally, and just enjoying my kids and being able to kind of spoil them every now and then and going on vacations with my kids if I have to or want to. That was the biggest joy I got from it.
Yeah, and I mean, it was joyful. And then, of course, you know, it was real tragic to see what happened afterwards with the USADA aftermath, the failure and whatnot. Can you talk us through what was happening before you were notified of the potential violation from USADA?
Oh man, I was surprised. I couldn't believe it because I didn't take anything. So I still am surprised. I think the thing with USADA. I'll come back from this like I always do, come back from everything, but they don't look at the circumstances in detail. They kind of just throw the whole book at you. And I think, especially if you get the report, there's very low residuals of this drug called clomiphene. I had no idea. It was such low residuals that they don't even know. I don't even know if it would have done anything. So, obviously,
right.
It could have came from a variety of different things, and they got to take into account situations like that and maybe lesser punishment, but kind of just a disbelief and shock. Like I can't believe that's happening. But again, if you look at the details, I think I have a lot of innocence going into this, and it was kind of my hands were tied on it, and the only thing to do is to keep going what I do and come back stronger.
Did you get the call before anyone else to be notified that you had tested for this substance, or did you hear from the UFC?
You know, that's the annoying thing. Media found out first, and then I found out.
Okay. Yeah,
so,
and you were stunned.
I didn't even know till a little bit after, and then I got notified by them. But yeah, I don't know if they tell the news outlets first or what, but I didn't even know until a little bit after, which is frustrating.
Were you concerned that people would turn on you if they thought you had taken a bad substance? I know that many fans have been burned emotionally by drug test failures, but people are cynical now and quick to assume the worst. However, like you said, there are many situations where fighters have come back and cleared their name from USADA testing protocol.
Yeah, that's kind of what I plan to do. Yeah, and I knew it would happen. I had a couple turn on me, but the ones that really know me and stand by me know what was up with all this and know that this is a mistake and that I could come back from it. And the true fans, the true people that stand by me, that's who I fight for, and that's who sticks by me, and that's who I care about. You know, if someone wants to write me off that quickly, then let bygones be bygones.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people also assume that banned substances in regional shows, especially some countries with state-sanctioned doping who have recently been banned from the Olympics, are absolutely commonplace, and that anyone competing on the circuit would be at a disadvantage without taking them. Is that something you have any awareness of when you were fighting overseas? I mean, did you often fight opponents who you suspected weren't natural?
Oh, yeah, I fought a plethora of them, a lot of them. I knew that right away coming out the Ultimate Fighter. I'd say definitely a majority of them are taking steroids or banned substances, and especially a lot of the Russians. And I think a good amount of them were. Definitely, and I knew that going in that a lot of these people are cheating. They don't test, especially internationally. They don't even test. So, I think a lot of fighters were definitely cheating. Yes.
Do you feel in some ways tainted by the idea of having been coming from outside of the UFC and thus not having a significant number of tests with USADA built up that to the point where you could try to, you know, quote, prove your innocence?
I wish they did that through the whole process, because I think I did a drug test right after and I came back negative, you know, so everything was, the whole process is confusing. At the end of the day, you got to definitely be careful what you take. Even supplements have stuff in there, which which I think is the case that happened with me. But it's a double-edged sword, some double-edged playing field sometimes, because outside of the UFC, everyone's taking stuff, especially international. So I think they got to look at factors like that. But the only thing I could do is kind of bite the bullet and keep going.
Now, were you taking any supplements leading up to the fight?
For Diego, no. The crazy thing is I never started taking supplements. The last couple of years I started taking supplements with all natural supplements that, you know, that were, and that passed the drug test before the fight, because that's why it's frustrating too. People are quick to say, oh, maybe he was doing this whole time, but I was drug tested before, you know, before it's mm-hmm. tough, and then also on the finale, and I passed all those drug tests. And this one too came up in the urine. I passed all the urine and blood tests before, so. People don't really have an argument there. That's why it's surprising, because to my knowledge, all the supplements were clean. So I don't know if it was something recently or what, but I know before, yeah, finale and all that, I was fine. All my drug tests came back negative.
Yeah, so you've had the supplements analyzed to find out where clomiphene came from?
The recent supplements, no, we never, if I wanted to fight this, the whole process, which I think I could have done, and there's a chance I could have won, but to test each supplement is $2,000, then you're going to have to get lawyer fees, and the lawyers are going to come to, so you're going to be out $20,000, and a lot of times, even if you fight it and win, you're still out 7, 8, 9 months. So you're almost better off just accepting it. That's kind of what I did. But no, we did not analyze it. I could kind of pinpoint it and say what it was from. I was seeing this doctor, one of those holistic guys, and he gave me herbal supplements recently. And for the most part, they're clean. But I think something in there had some stuff in there. Some clomiphene, and I think it had residuals or something in there, because when it came back, it was very, very low residuals, and they never announced all that. So that's kind of a frustrating thing, too. That's a frustrating thing. I didn't get the bottles analyzed for sure, because if I did that, I'd have to go through the whole process, you know, and I looked at all the facts, and it was kind of, again, my hands were tied, and I just kind of just took it, but we didn't get them all analyzed, because that was the whole, we didn't go through the whole process, we kind of just accepted the terms.
Well, tainted supplements do happen, folks. I mean, anyone who's ever bought supplements on eBay has received at least one notice about someone's account being closed for selling illegal steroids under different names and labels, often to unsuspecting buyers. I mean, you fought for a long time, you know, including eras where certain therapies and testosterone were allowed, you know, therapeutic exemptions and so on and so forth. Is this sort of enhancing substance something you've had any experience with at all in the past, even in the past, if it may have been legal?
Nothing. I knew some fighters that were doing it. I knew people doing the TRT stuff, but no, I never looked into it. Never crossed my mind.
Okay. That's something. Yeah. So, in any event, you accepted the 1 year suspension, and, you know, do you have a return date in mind at this point?
Well, this summer I could return. I believe it's late summer, August, and my goal is right when it's over. You know, I have a good manager, Daniel Rubenstein, right now working for me. I'm still in really good. Nowadays, I'm in a good relationship with UFC, so we're all good there. And it's just right when the suspension ends, get in that fight, and I'm hoping to get something lined up in August. And I think I'm pretty sure they'll have me too. Right when it ends, I'm sure they'll book me a fight right after it ends, shortly after. So. I don't see myself fighting, not fighting, you know, I see myself fighting no longer past August or September.
Yeah, real quickly, because you've been on the phone for a while and you've graciously answered all of our questions, and I appreciate it. You talked about your opponent, Diego Lima, after the fight, and according to MMA Junkie, you said, for our fight, JT knew our anti-doping would be only a normal P-test, so he must have done a cycle for that. And then 1 month later, he flunked with the post-fight or post-cycle drug. Of course, he was taking stuff at the time. You competed against each other with sportsmanship inside the cage. It was sad to see things turn, you know, acrimonious after a great fight. That was actually something that Diego Lima said. Do you have any message for Diego and the claim that, of course, you were taking stuff?
I just want to tell him, come on, Diego, you know me. We lived in the house together. You know I wouldn't do this, and I wouldn't take that. And I was hurt, bummed out, because now I kind of have ill will towards the guy. I think it's a total cop-out bullshit excuse, and it's not even true. They do test for performance enhancers. They don't do blood tests, but they do urine tests. And when it came back out of competition, it was in my urine. So I did this test already, and they tested for it, and nothing came back, you know. So it's not only not true, it's false. It's not true. It's not even a true statement. And to me, it's just a total excuse. Like, he knows me, you know. He knows I wouldn't do that. And I'm surprised how quick he is to judge. I mean, I know when you lose a fight, you're trying to look for any excuse possible, and I think that's exactly what he did. He's just looking for an excuse. He can't handle how good I was. I was in Colorado under the watchful eye of Matt Brown, and I had no, I wouldn't even know where to look, you know, to find drugs like this or to do stuff like this. I wouldn't have the time, money, or where to look before all this. So there's no way I did this, you know, and for him to come out and say that and just kind of throw me under the bus was hurtful and disheartening, you know. And again, with the out of competition fail, I was supposed to explain all the facts, that what was in my system, the absurd low amount of it, you know. So if I was taking something, I wouldn't do it now, then, or there's no reason to take it, or the low amount. I just, the facts don't even add up. So yeah, again, the main thing is that it's just a blatant lie. They did test me for the finale for that. I did the P test, came back good, and it's the P test that I flunked for, you know what I mean? So I've already passed that test. So it's just, the main thing is just a big lie and a total excuse to me. And I mean, in case I hear from the guy, I'm kind of upset with the guy too, you know, for him to say that about me and to try to make an excuse like that and you know, to kind of throw me under the bus like that.
What about the idea that you were not subject to the same drug testing protocols? Is that accurate? What sort of tests? You were given a urine test, were you given a blood test as well?
So he's talking about USADA does blood tests and urine. So before this, yes, there was no blood test. The urine test, though, is capable too. That's what picks up a lot of the performance enhancers and everything too. And the test I failed for wasn't a blood test. You know what I mean? It was a urine test. So they tested my urine for this substance that night, and I passed. I did not. It was not in my system. So that's what I mean why it's not a true statement, because they do test for performance enhancers, for sure. The commission does too. So it wasn't a blood test, but I never failed for anything in my blood, you know what I mean? So that's why it's not true. I mean, I think he just was upset, saw something, and just went with had to make himself feel better, you know, to get his butt kicked. But if you listen to the facts and know that I was drug tested, that's why I was so upset. It's like, I was drug tested, so what he's saying is not even true.
Well, there you have it, folks. JT Money has given his answer, and I appreciate him addressing these comments and you know, some of these questions that we brought up and many of the fans have brought up over the course of the last, you know, 6 months or however long they've been going on. Many people were thrilled by your journey and are still thrilled, and they're looking for you to get back in the cage, which hopefully will happen this summer. Ultimately, nobody can really know what happened with the person in private, and only the person in question knows, you know, what's in their heart. Either way, it can't be pleasant to live with the psychological consequences. So I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, and I always want to take someone at their word, you know, when they say they didn't do something that they're accused of. Because like I said, false positives do happen. Courtney Casey is an example. Other fighters that I could throw out there. So USADA is not foolproof. USADA is not 100% accurate. So.
Well, and it's and thanks. I wanted to clear this up for a while. And the main thing I just want to get across to people is what he said is not true, because they do test for, they did test me for performance enhancers through my urine in my fight, and the test I failed for way later was the same thing in my urine. You know what I mean? So I was tested that night and never cheated. So I don't know why he would. He might not know the facts, but I mean, I know he was drug tested too. So I'm just kind of, maybe he doesn't know, but that's what happened. Yeah, it's just a bummer that it went down. Because again, it was a surprise to me, and you know, I had a lot of esteem going, but I want to continue to stay positive like I always have, and I think I still have a lot of people behind me, and I'll show it, you know, just keep on showing what I've done when I return and just keep on winning.
What about people who say that, you know, you're agreeing to a settlement like this is an admission of guilt? Has anyone reacted that way to it?
I've heard some things like this, but again, I think people just don't know what goes on. You're kind of fucked, right? If anything comes up, just for all fighters, all people, even if it's on accident or something, but you're pretty much fucked regardless. There's a couple people that I think fought it and won, but even the ones that fight it and win, that does happen, that costs a lot of money and time. And if people have money and time, I guess I have the money thing now for sure, but was it worth it? You start going into all my savings and then also the time. I'm still looking at if I fight it and win, I'm still looking at very close to the same sentence. And here's the thing, too. You say you fight it, and you can still lose, because it comes down to this with Jeff Nowitzki. You knowingly ingest something. Even if you take it on accident, you know what you take. You know,
right.
You know all the supplements, you know what you take. So when it comes down to it, you're still probably going to fail, even if it was an accident, you know. And then, but I think a really good case to bring up here, too, is the Lyman Good case. I don't know if you heard about that. Lyman Good, he actually fought it. I think he still got suspended. This is how wrong his shot is. They still suspended him, but he went after the sub to prove his innocence, which is great, which I should have talked to him before all this, but he actually, I heard, went after the supplement company and won. And, like, he doesn't even have to fight again. I think the rumor is he's made millions or quite a bit of money. He actually went after the supplement company and won, you know, and that happens quite a bit. And he's just a fighter that comes to mind that, you know, people should know about that. That's, you know, he fought it and won, and which is cool to see. And he still got suspended by USADA. So you can see that obviously he didn't do anything wrong, and they still threw the book at him. So, I think USADA is good for the most part. I actually do like him. So I just think they got to clean up kind of their stance on some things and clean up, look at all the facts, and then go there instead of just putting everyone in one category.
Yeah, I mean, my concern, one of my initial concerns when I heard that you flagged was about what would happen to the money you won, knowing that you needed it for your family. The test wasn't attached to a particular fight, so the money wasn't affected. Is that correct?
Right. It was out of a competition. And again, for this same drug that went down, that's why I'm like so clear, I was tested for it, you know? So for the fight and everything, I was good. There was nothing in my system. There's nothing. So, it has nothing to totally different a couple months after the fact, I believe, 2 or 3 months after.
All right,
it was
listen,
just,
I just
want to
ask.
Before, cause I think I had a fight scheduled with Bilal. So what they do is they start doing the out-of-competition testing.
Yes.
And then that's what happened. But again, I was the same thing. I was still like, I just was shocked. Like when I was like, what? I'm still perplexed, you know. Which here in the Lyman Good case, I heard about that after, but it's nice to hear stories like that and come out on top, because I mean that's the same pretty much the same thing that happened to me.
Yeah, he went after Gasparri supplements, and good for him. I saw him fought. He fought in the Long Island card, and he seems like a really, really good guy, and it's good to see him sort of clear his name. He's been vindicated, because I had a discussion with Dan Hardy about this,
about how, really?
You know, Dan Hardy made the same point, essentially, made a point, something to the effect that it's too difficult for fighters to fight USADA, disprove USADA, clear their name. And I said, yeah, to a certain extent, I agree, but you got people like Lyman Good and Courtney Casey. I think Justin Ledet is another fighter that have managed to do it. So, you know, it can be done, but like you said, it's a lot of money and it's a lot of dedication. And in the end, you may not even win anyway, because all that people remember is, oh, look, this guy flagged for a banned substance. Listen, before I let you go, I know I said that a little while ago, but I thank you for answering all my questions. Who do you match up best, or who do you feel you match up best with in terms of some of the upper top-tier fighters like Tyron Woodley and Wonderboy and even GSP in your division? Because we could definitely see you fighting one of these guys in the future.
Yeah, I really think I'm right up there. If you really look at my track record, that's why people say, I hear some UFC guys, oh, JTS is working his way up. I got to say, hey, no, I can tell. I've been working my way up for the last 10 years, more than that. And everyone I fought UFC contenders, champions, years ago. Beasts that were in their prime years ago. So I've been putting in the leg work, and I think I'm right up there with all those guys. I think probably Tyron and me would be a great fight. He'd be a tough challenge, but I see the Kobe Covington kid. I would love to smash him. He's a wrestler, too. And I see a couple others. Who else is I interested in? But like Wonderboy, I think I match really well with him. I think most of those guys I beat. But, of course, a dream fight of mine, I've always said, I want the biggest, best names and the money fights. And I think GSP. I think that's a dream of mine, and I can imagine it already. I think it's just you know, guy I looked up to and kind of similar style, and I think it would be an awesome fight, especially if he comes back down to 170s. But I think I'm top two. I think I'm up there if my head's on right, and I fight to as good as I know I can fight. I think I'm right up there, and I think 170 needs a star. I'll tell you that. And I think I could go there and get a couple wins and go for that belt.
Well, listen, Jesse, thank you so much for coming on the show with us. It's been great talking to you. Do you have any websites or sponsors or social media sites you want to give out to the audience out there?
Oh, thanks. Just my website, my Twitter and Instagram, just JT Money MMA. Facebook page, Jesse Taylor. But yeah, that's about it. I appreciate the interview.
All right, well, listen.
Good to me to have a platform.
No, I appreciate this, and please join us again sometime down the road as you come back and you fight and, you know, you march towards a championship. I really, really respect your journey. Like I said, you don't get enough credit, I feel, and that's part of our job is to make sure that people understand and appreciate your contributions and your career. So, again, thank you so much, and best of luck in the future.
Thanks, Bob. Have a good one.
Take care, brother. All right, that was Jesse Taylor. We're going to take a brief timeout here on Carson's Corner. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some UFC 218, some potential matchups for UFC 220, and maybe some other stuff. Maybe we'll respond to some of your emails. So keep it right here on Blog Talk Radio.
we're living.